So here's what we're going to do. John Adams originally, FDH Lounge dignitary John Adams, sort of conceptualized this segment. We'll announce the winner on the next show. Johnny couldn't be here tonight. I will play the audio for him between now and the next show and get his thoughts for the winner here. This is the FDH Lounge Sports Story Slam that we are doing here, a segment where we are going to be just setting this up here. Each of us taking 5 minutes to put a sports story out there. Bonus points if it involves one of us in this here. So we will get a chance to hear each of these stories told as only we can do it. The first guy that we're bringing in, our good friend and lounge dignitary, Steve Callis. You can read his stuff at stevecallis.com and follow him every Thursday night, 6 o'clock Eastern time on WVOX in the New York City area, as well as WVOX.com. Steve, can't apologize to you more. Really, really sorry for getting to you at this point in time, sir. So good to have you on, my man. How are you this
morning? No apology necessary, Rick. Jordan was laugh out loud funny, and Adam was as well. So, you know, no apology necessary.
It was great to do the segments with them. And just to set it up here, I'm giving you first crack because honestly, it was the night that you were in town at Harpo's. We had a little bit of a confab with the 21st Century Media Alliance, and my man John Adams really was impressed with just listening to some of your stories and things like that from your time in New York and some different times in the media there and everything. So I'd like to just take it away with you here. We're setting it up 5 minutes for each of us here on a sports story. So you start yours, and this can be on any topic. Again, judges instructed to give bonus points for anything involving you. I understand the story you're going to tell tonight does involve you. So we'll put you on the clock here. Your 5 minutes are now underway.
Well, you have to do what you can for the bonus points, Rick. So this is a true story. I was writing a weekly column for Madison Square Garden's website. And, you know, their main focus, of course, is the Knicks and the Rangers. We could write about anything and did. But Stan Fischler, who some of your listeners will know, is a 50-year hockey writer, a legend in New York. He, for the 75th anniversary of the Rangers, gave out his rankings of the top Ranger forwards of all time, the top Ranger defensemen of all time, the top Ranger goalies of all time. Now, I've been a lifelong Ranger fan, and my father goes back to the 30s, obviously long before me, even before World War II. And so I took issue with one of Stan Fischler's rankings, and I think some of your listeners will know the person he ranked high. There's a guy who's still around today. Rod Gilbert was a legendary Ranger, a Hall of Famer, you know, matinee idol, still around today doing work for the Rangers, and a great, great hockey player, and I can tell you one of my heroes when I was a little kid. And he was ranked fourth by Stan Fischler, and there was another great player right before Gilbert named Andy Bathgate, who was even better than Gilbert, a fantastic player, a Hall of Famer, et cetera, et cetera. So Stan Fischler put in his rankings, and I very respectfully wrote an article saying, hard to go against the hockey maven Stan Fischler, but there's little doubt that Andy Bathgate should be above Rod Gilbert, and here are the reasons why. And, you know, I'll just give you a couple. I don't want to delve too much into it. But Andy Bathgate, as a Ranger for 8 years in a row, was in the top four in scoring in the National Hockey League. At the time, he was the only guy on the team who could score. This is late 50s through the mid-60s. The Rangers were terrible. So they all ganged up on Bathgate, and he still would be one of the top scorers in the league for 8 years in a row as a Ranger. By comparison, Gilbert was in the top four, I think, once in his whole career. Just as one comparison. But I wrote a very respectful article stating my position. And 2 hours after they put it up at MSG's website, there was a scathing rebuke from Stan Fischler that not only gave reasons why Gilbert was better than Bathgate, but just slaughtered me personally. Who are you? You're young. You don't know what you're talking about. You weren't there. I, Stan Fischler, covered the Rangers since 1953. What do you know? Blah, blah, blah. Okay, you know me, Rick. You know I had some good ammunition before I would write anything like that, and again, wrote it very respectfully. So now I had to come back and respond to what Stan Fischler had said. I couldn't really leave that hanging, and my editor didn't really want to publish a response. Now, keep in mind, Stan Fischler is a legend. You know, I'm a guy who had been working there 50 weeks. He had been working there 50 years, so I understand the problem. But here's what happened. A friend of mine told me that Stan Fischler had written two different books in the 1980s after Gilbert and Bathgate had retired. where he, Stan Fischler, the names of the books are A Personal Ranking of the 100 Greatest Hockey Players in Hockey History. And in the top 100 in hockey history, according to Stan Fischler, Andy Bathgate was in the book, and Roger Bear wasn't. So that gives me some pretty good ammo, right? So after that, I also look at the top 100 hockey players of all time where the Hockey News had published a list. Andy Bathgate was 58th, and Roger Bear wasn't in the top 100. I called up two hockey writers I know in Canada, old guys, senior writers, one for the Hockey News, one for a Canadian paper. I said, tell me the truth, Roger Bear versus Andy Bathgate. And they said, both great players, Bathgate was just on the higher level. And I said, great, I'm writing an article for MSG, can I quote you? And they said, yeah, you can quote me. And I said, yeah, I'm kind of having an argument with Stan Fischler. And both of them then said, Rick, oh, no, 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 you can't quote me. I don't want Stan Fischler to be angry with me. Do not quote me. So I didn't quote them. But I wrote a responsive article, again, very respectfully, and I used the two books that he had written, plus the Hockey News book, plus, you know, unnamed hockey writers have said, couldn't name the guys, didn't name the guys. And then I went on to further detail about how Bathgate was simply better, including a telling stat in the history of the National Hockey League, only four people have been in the top four in scoring 8 years in a row or more. Your audience will guess Wayne Gretzky was first with 13. Stan Mikita had 9 years in a row. And then Phil Esposito and Andy Bathgate had 8. You know, there was just no comparison. They were both great players, but one was more like a dominant Hall of Fame forever player, and the other guy was a great player who made the Hall of Fame. I don't want to use Koufax, but it would be like Koufax and Gaylord Perry. It would be like a great, great player versus a great player. So I sent that down to my editor. He still didn't want to go with it. I said, look, you've got to publish this. This is wrong if you don't publish it. And finally they decided to publish it. When I wrote to the Garden, I wrote three 300-word things. And instead of making that the lead thing, they made it the third thing. I never heard anything again from Stan Fischler, which says to me to this day he doesn't know that there was a response to his response. And I'm hoping someone's going to send him the archive of your show now, Rick, because I see my 5 minutes are up. But that's my story where I had to take on a 50-year legend and all the facts on my side, and I still don't know if I won or not. That's my story. Excellent.
Well, that's your story, and you're sticking to it. I'll tell you what, I'll give you a crack at hearing mine here, and then we'll get Nate Noy on the phone lines after this. I'll go next with mine. Mine does not include, and by the way, and I was entertained by yours as I was previously at Harpo's, hearing that rendition of it. You're going to be a strong contender. I think you and Nate are going to be fighting it out largely because my story doesn't involve me. I'd have to dig a little deeper to think of one. I mean, I sort of, you know, when I was in the Tribe clubhouse one time, after I'd started ripping him, you know, for being fat and an underachiever and everything like that, I did sort of cower at when he came walking by, you know, like, is this 6'8" guy going to take a swing at me? But I don't think anything like that makes a good enough story. I have to think and dig deep for something to involve me. Here's the one I'm going to tell. It doesn't directly involve me. Just sort of indirectly, but it really doesn't involve me. Friend of mine growing up, you know, we've all got a friend who kind of brags about things and, you know, things to kind of puff themselves up and make themselves feel better. And his cousin was a journeyman pitcher for a good stretch of time in the major leagues, Dale Mihorsik. I don't even know if you remember him. Late 70s, early 80s.
I heard the name, yep.
Yeah, bounced around a little bit. He was with the Yankees for a little bit. He was with a couple different teams. All right, never had the greatest stuff. And for a while, I think he might have been a little better than a journeyman. But he never was going to get beyond a certain level, you know, middle relief, setup guy if he was having like a career year. But that's basically what he was. So late in his career, and I had read this about him, and this is something I'd read a couple of years ago, and when I was doing a baseball show here on the Sports Talk Network, I brought this up during the baseball show, so I'm sort of referencing the story that I told then. But I read this about him, and if anybody Googles Dale Mihorsik, you'll see this story. Late in his career, he was pitching somewhere, I want to say maybe Milwaukee or somewhere. Supposedly, one of the things he was doing to hang on at that point was doctoring the ball, as a lot of these journeymen are wont to do, supposedly. And supposedly doing it with a piece of sandpaper. And the reason that this was thought to be known at the time was that the ump decided at a certain point he was going to make a move for the mound, whereupon Dale Mihorsik is then trapped at that point. What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? What do you think he did? He pops that sucker in his mouth.
Oh, my goodness.
Gets rid of the evidence that way. And ultimately had to swallow, because then it's, you don't want to risk a situation. Hey, that doesn't look like chaw in your mouth there, boy. You know, so you don't want to have something like that happen. So whereupon he swallows it. Whereupon a little bit later on, this gets horribly sick. Has to go to the emergency room there, whereupon they find some intestinal chafing and bleeding and whatnot, because the thing that he didn't remember apparently at this key moment is that it is going to travel down your intestinal tract, and it is very unwise to count on the digestive juices taking the edge off of this, so to speak, here. So the only real touch that I basically put on the story was telling it on the air subsequently. And by the way, this friend of mine heard the story, didn't much like that I was talking about this, and told me so after the fact. But I, of course, punctuated the story in my usual classy manner with, well, I hope for the sake of his South End, that wasn't 80 grit he was using. So.
So he's much more sophisticated than Gaylord Perry, right? Who just had the emery board or whatever, and he threw it on the ground. Remember he got caught in his back pocket?
Oh, that was, wasn't that Sutton? I think that might have been Sutton.
I thought it was Perry.
Oh, it was Gaylord Perry that happened to?
I'm
okay.
Pretty sure it was.
Oh, all right. For some reason, I thought Perry never got caught with anything. Okay.
But obviously, your guy was more sophisticated. It cost him, but he didn't get caught.
Well, and I brought up to Tommy John when he was on the show, there was a quote. I just wanted to get his thoughts on this. There was a quote from a scout about a game late in his career that he pitched against Don Sutton. The quote from the scout was, Tommy John against Don Sutton, if anybody finds a clean baseball from that game, they should send it to Cooperstown. Tommy
allegedly.
John, he took it in stride. He's a class act, Steve. He took it in stride. So, all right. So your story's out there. My story's out there. We'll be playing the tape for John Adams. I wish we could do instant feedback with a judge here tonight, but it's not in the cards. But then again, this was Johnny's idea in the first place. Him listening to you that night at Harpo's when we had the 21st Century Media Alliance thing sort of set this in motion. So I guess it's kind of fitting to do it that way, even if Johnny couldn't be here tonight. But, Steve, always a pleasure, my man. I know we got some more stuff coming up with you and the Sports Talk Network that we'll be teasing and talking about here in the new year. And just look forward to all of that, and always having you back on the FDH Lounge, buddy.
Looking forward to it, Rick. Happy New Year to everybody out there.
All right, pal. Happy New Year to you, too. You are an American original. Happy to have you as a dignitary, buddy. The one and only Steve Kallas, everybody. You can find him at stevekallas.com, Steve, K-A-L-L-A-S.com, also WVOX in New York. So we're going to get right now our good buddy Nate Noy, an original FDH Lounge dignitary, on the phone lines. We're going to get his story. Steve bumped right up to about the 5-minute mark on his story. Mine came in a little bit underneath that. Mine, again, I'm calling it right now. I don't think I'm going to be winning this thing. I think it's between Steve and Nate. I couldn't really come up with something that good that involved myself. Maybe if I think about it enough of a period of time. I do have a story from being a reporter and going up and covering the Buffalo Bisons a couple of years ago when they were a Tribe affiliate, and Brandon Phillips being a real a-hole to me in the clubhouse. I guess I could talk about that a little bit. But, you know, I was hard-pressed to think of anything that entertaining on a major sports level that involved me and a sports figure. With Steve Kallas, his interactions with the legendary hockey writer Stan Fischler, he's the leader in the clubhouse to this point. I'm going to guess he's probably ahead of me with my entry here. My good buddy Nate Noy, our original dignitary, he's coming up here. I've heard at least a Cliff Notes version of this story. My guess is Steve and Nate are battling it out to be the first winner of the FDH Lounge Sports Story Slam, but we'll find out after we get this thing judged. In the meantime, we got our good pal Nate Noy, original dignitary, on the phone lines. Nate, good to have you on, my man. How are you tonight, buddy?
Hey, Rick, doing well. Great as always. Pleasure to be on the show.
Apologize for getting to you as late as we did. We were running a little bit behind here with Adam Carolla and Sean Casey. It's been a banner night thus far in the lounge. Great story told by Steve. We're not going to have the immediate feedback on the judging here tonight. Belfi was supposed to judge. Surprise. He took off. So anyways, John Adams, this was sort of his idea in the first place. So we're going to play him the audio after it's done here before the next show, hopefully, and get his thoughts on this. We got audio from Steve. We got his story. We got my story. I think you guys are probably going to be battling it out. My story didn't involve me in it really directly, and you know, instructions are that the judges are to take that into account. So I sort of voluntarily put myself behind the eight ball, and essentially the odds are long against me. Steve's was really good. Yours is really good from what I've heard of it, but you got 5 minutes on yours, buddy, so set it up here. And
okay, and I'm not sure I had a brush with fame, but here goes. It was 1994. I graduated from college, and two of my buddies from college and I decided we're going to go across the country and also to Canada. And part of the agenda, we went to Fenway and saw that, and that was awesome. And then we're heading up to Olympic Stadium, and the Astros were in town to play the Expos. And this was the year that Bagwell and Biggio were back in their prime, really breaking out. I had Bagwell in a fantasy league, so I was all geeked up about watching the game. So we get to Montreal, and you know it's hard. You got to kind of envision this old Olympic Stadium. But we went out to the bleachers to watch the batting practice, hoping to catch a home run ball in batting practice. And the way they set up the stadium is the bleachers in the outfield are kind of like high school football bleachers, you know, just sit down kind of bleachers. But behind that, they had this empty concrete zone with big barriers that I'm guessing were at least 5 feet high, maybe 6 feet high. And there was a barrier on the left, a barrier on the right, and behind the bleachers just this emptiness. They had security posted on the left-hand side, but not the right-hand side of the barriers. And it was very clear, under no circumstance, you go past the barrier onto the empty concrete. So we're sitting there watching batting practice, and Bagwell is just launching them into the bleachers, and we keep missing the balls. And he hits one that clears the bleachers and lands in the concrete area. I look over, I'm looking at this ball, I can see it. It's like 30 feet away from me, and it's just sitting there in this area where you can't go no matter what. I'm thinking, man, I want that ball so bad. And I look, and the security guard kind of turns his head around the corner. I jump out of the bleachers, I jump onto this barrier, I drop about 6 feet, I grab the ball, the security guard sees me and says, "Hey, you, stop!" I'm like, "Oh, crap." So I run to the other side of the concrete barrier, climb up on it and start heading through Olympic Stadium, and I hear a guy on the radio, another security guy, give my description, and then he starts following me. So I'm running across Olympic Stadium through in and through people with my ball in hand thinking, crap, I'm going to jail. So what I ended up doing is I found an exit. They didn't get me. I went back to the minivan, and while my friends sit there and enjoy the Expos versus the Astros, me with ball in hand sit in the minivan and listen to the game on the radio. So,
was it worth it?
I got Bagwell's home run batting practice ball, so, you know, I always wanted to watch a game in Olympic Stadium. Technically, I guess you could say I've been to a game in Olympic Stadium, but I didn't make it past batting practice. So, and you never know, there might still be wanted posters for me in the city of Montreal, although hopefully those left from the Expos did.
The best part is anybody that knows you could see you like passing a lie detector test or something, you know, with, "I've been to a game at Olympic Stadium in Montreal," you know. You wouldn't even blink, Nate.
It was worth it, but yeah, I guess part of it is the build up, you know, going to see Bagwell and all that, going to watch the Astros in Montreal. Didn't get there, got there, didn't get there, got the batting practice ball and had to scare my life. I mean, really, like I said, I could hear my description on the guy's walkie-talkie, and I'm like, oh, dude, I'm going to be in a, it's not quite like being in a Mexican jail, but I don't really want to do any time in any Canadian jail, so.
Oh, yeah, that really would have been something, man. I could just see you getting stuck with the whole Midnight Express deal there, huh? That would have been.
So, I don't know. It might not be your other stories tonight, but that was the one I could think of for myself that was kind of a brush with something. So, and I kept that ball. I bought a nice little case for it, and, you know, the ball has a story. It's not quite like catching, you know, Barry Bonds 715th or something, but it's a ball with a story and one that one that I live firsthand. So
well, always entertaining, buddy. We know that about you. So I appreciate your entry into this. The three of us competing this time around, we're definitely going to be making this. We're putting this into our rotation of features on the show. I don't know that any one thing can be called a truly regular feature, just because we have so many. I mean, it's been a long time since we got the conspiracy theory, and that's another one that you've kind of exemplified very well there. But look forward to doing this again with you, along with all the other features